Yeah.
Well, I didn't get too much anything except that.
And so what happens when you, I mean, they usually call you like first thing in the morning here. So it's like, what, 5 o'clock in the morning?
Well, it's actually 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. Yeah. Well, you get a phone call.
Well, they have a meeting. They have a final meeting at 9 o'clock there. So
you get a phone call at 4 o'clock in the morning.
They tell you that.
So what do you think when the phone's ringing at 4 o'clock in the morning? Is the wrong number?
Well, you get up and answer, and they immediately explain who they are, and they make sure it didn't crank call because they get two guys to talk it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one guy says, and then says, I'm going to turn you over to so-and-so, and he talks it, too.
Oh, so they don't want anybody, you know, behaving like
they're a prank call, because university people, I mean...
Yeah.
Noriari actually was expecting the thing, because he couldn't have kids, that's all we met over there that day. He said he had the paper already assigned and everything... And it didn't come the previous year or something.
Oh, wow. So he figured he was in.
He knew he was. Well, the academia knew more about what was going on. I didn't.
So what was your reaction?
Well, pretty complete surprise.
So that was a really pretty exciting thing to happen.
It is the most exciting thing that ever happened to me. Yeah.
So this was how long had you been retired from Monsanto then?
Oh, 86.
Okay.
Yeah, and pretty much what we'd done there had quieted down.
Sure.
There was this one thing in 95, Atlanta, the Catalyst Society.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But other than that, that was, you know, and I'd consulted a little bit with Monsanto, and there was some activity.
Sure.
But they weren't really fascinated with this particular field.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing was amino acids and some of these... naproxen, one of these NSAID type alpha aerial acrylics that the pharmaceutical people make for aspirin-like activity.
Mm-hmm.
They call them NSAIDs.
Yeah.
And that certainly this kind of synthesis could be used a way to make naproxen, which is a natural derivative.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our people was interested in working on that. He didn't get too far along on it, but
so
I don't really know whether naproxen's made this way or not. It can be made mm-hmm. this way. It may be. They're doing pretty well with it. It's a leave, you know. It's
sure.
One that they advertise it a lot, and so I really it could easily be using this technique. Mm.
So I guess it's, I mean, did you just have to, like, sit down after that or fall down? Or
yeah, well, they told you not to go to sleep again because you get immediately get phone calls and the press and everything.
Wow, yeah. So then you get noticed right away.
Oh, it is. You get noticed right away. But the main thing is that Monsanto, remember, going through a lot of affliction. So they called Monsanto, and Monsanto said, who's he? I mean, that was the first thing. Well, because they're all over in the egg division, they didn't know anything. They finally found somebody in the personnel department, Gary Barton, that knew me, and he hightailed it over to the house.
Mm.
But, and it's perfectly reasonable. They'd forgotten all about
sure.
me.
Sure. Well, this was work done, what, 25, 30
yeah.
years earlier almost.
That's right. But that's pretty much true with Nobel Prizes. They're not very timely. 5 or 6 years is very common. It's pretty hard to do it less than that.
Yeah. Yes.
Even the Watson Crick thing was 6 years, I think, and Woodward was quite a while too. And I did know that somebody put me up in 1990. He sent me a copy of the thing. It's very easy to put somebody up. You don't have to have a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They just all he had to do was send in a copy of that Accounts of Chemical Research article I wrote,
mm-hmm.
which adds up everything. That makes a nice place because it's got all the references.
Right, everything's there.
And he just had that one page. And that's all that that I think Per Alberg had. He just read that. But they don't really require as elaborate a thing as most prizes do. You know, you have to write all the stuff like you're getting here.
Mm-hmm.
They do the digging themselves through others.
Yeah.
And they have professors around. And I'm just not sure what went on. And Per Alberg just told me the timing. He thought we would. I was decided in winter, which doesn't make sense with the quarry contact.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure what's up, but and why they, the Wolf Prize went differently.
Mm-hmm.
And the Coggan people were, he's a very nice guy, and I've known him for years, and he's visited us and everything else. And I haven't seen him much in this century, but we used to see him once a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And he came over to the company and so forth. And he was definitely an early pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it without chirality in the process. He did it with a chiral carbon backbone,
mm-hmm.
which became the way that most of the ligands made now.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, I know that being first counts a lot because mm-hmm. There's a controversy in the mass spec field about the prize. I think it was maybe the following year mm-hmm. went to Koichi Tanaka for the development of matrix-assisted laser desorption mm-hmm. ionization. And he showed that what he had done was show that the very first mass spec by this method, by something that's was done, that he did it on a large molecule, like 100,000 molecular weight or something, a large protein, or maybe a small protein. Whereas there's a group in Germany that had been pursuing the same objective in a very precise, careful, logical step, a bunch of research steps, and most of the people in the mass spec field feel that this group in Germany should have gotten acknowledged for that, but mm-hmm. Tanaka published a paper that was in precedence, and that's apparently the main thing that because the reality of it is nobody uses Tanaka's method today.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that the Germans developed that he used today. So being first is really important.
Oh yeah. Well, this whole Nobel thing is about being first, and a lot of the things like the DNA, which is the famous one we have, would have been discovered 2 or 3 months by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys did it, and we read them. You probably might have read the double helix, too. I don't know. And all that went on, but nevertheless, they did it mostly with models and things, but it took somebody to get the right pictures. But they recognized the significance of the pictures.
Yes.
That was important. So and the electron microscope was just like you described. That came out, three guys got it, but there were two guys in the middle 80s got it. And I suppose it was quite a little while before they did their work. And then they did notice that the guy who had the first prototype was a guy named Ritzke back in 1932. And he made one, but he never did anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
But he made a prototype.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Germany. But they recognized that, and they gave it to the three of them. But usually there's somebody left out. I got a book on it because I've read a lot about it since it happened. And they said they don't make many mistakes. They did find a mistake they thought they made, but they don't make many mistakes, but they do leave out.
Mm-hmm.
The mistake is omissions, but they don't put it, don't
give it to somebody that doesn't deserve it. Yeah.
They said there was one Swedish guy that had something for stabilizing silage, but it didn't work except for Swedish silage or something. It didn't seem like they thought that was bad. Books were open from 1950 back, and this book was on the cases, and they went into Einstein, and they went in and how Mendeleev got left out, and it was fascinating reading through that. But there was a whole bunch of stuff, but I think that it has to be about being first. There's something in society that accepts that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You're the first to climb Everest. Who's
mm-hmm.
the second? You don't know.
Yeah, right.
And he may have had just a tougher job than just as much. But the mountain climbing is worse than any place. The first ascent of these mountains is something, but in science at least pays off the guys running second a little bit. I think mountain climbing is the worst one I can come up with.
There's a book by this guy did the road to Stockholm. I don't know.
I've got that book. There's an awful lot of things there, but it's amazing that the prize Trump saw all other prizes. One guy told me this, says you got the one that Trump saw all other prizes, mm-hmm. and it doesn't make any difference what it is. This is the only one that crosses into the arts and everything else. I could paint a picture and get the top prize in that. He said, fine, we'd have our dinner and go ahead, but it wouldn't be any carryover. Yeah. This doesn't leave you the rest of your life.
Yeah. There's something about, it's just recognized by everyone. You know, I mean, it's recognized by everyone.
Everyone. It doesn't matter who you are. It's the only prize I can think of that's recognized by everyone.
You know, whether you're a guy, you know, a carpenter or a high-powered executive or an airline pilot or your housewife, you know, Nobel Prize, bang.
That's right.
You know, everybody understands what it means.
You know, we came back from Sweden and we got, we couldn't claim on an earlier flight because we didn't make it exactly on time. Mm-hmm. And so we can get save 3 hours waiting. We told them, those porters knew all about it. They just show us the medal and we take it to them. And they put me through security in front of the plane. They just bypass security and just put us through right in front of the plane. Just all
just they whip that sucker out.
Show us the medal. That's all they want to know. No, it's the only prize I can think of. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, even these things like Congressional Medal of Honor and so forth. I mean, they're great. And you have a White House reception and all that. But it didn't. This had a White House reception. We had that.
Oh, really?
Yes,
okay.
We did.
Oh, wow.
Some of them didn't go. I think it was stupid not to go. We went. Mm-hmm. That was before you went to Sweden.
Mm.
And I thought it was. Would have been stupid not to go.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And it was after 9/11. The place was closed except for tourists.
Yeah.
But the Swedish embassy had a very, very nice affair. They had a special dinner for us. Mm-hmm. They always do that. Mm-hmm. And that was separate from that. But they did the White House thing. And
so you got a lot of. How long did that kind of celebrity round last? You know, a couple of months, a year, or what?
Well, Never's dead.
Uh-huh.
The autograph people.
Mm.
I don't get many. I'd say last year I'd get maybe a dozen autographs.
Oh, really?
Mostly from Germany.
Hmm. So people send you.
Germany is great on asking for autographs. Little old ladies in Germany collecting autographs. In fact, it is my grandson, I know, surfing the internet as I found out that there's a market for these autographs. Mine was $10. I don't know where he found that, but he found that somewhere in the thing that they collect autographs and then they sell their collections and things.
Mm-hmm.
Sell individual ones so you can get more in your case than the others. So I'd say that you usually get a stamped envelope, and they just want your signature and a picture if you've got one.
Sure, really.
And I'm just amazed, but it's mostly Germany.
Hmm.
But there's more of a tradition of science there than there is in most countries.
Yeah. But you had gotten recognition prior to the Nobel Prize,
the
word
interesting
was
part there was the news edition, CNE News, where they. Because they were a new group,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't really do their homework looking back, because this guy started off his article saying, he called me the stealth chemist, knows who. And I said, it's a priceless article to see any news.
Yeah.
And because he didn't realize all these other ones. I mean, the ACS recognition is a very nice thing, and you have an award dinner, and it's a very nice affair, but people forget it immediately.
Mm. Yeah.
Or you may get on a list of the previous ones, so the next year, I guess, one looks to see who's got them before. But it doesn't affect your whole life. This affects your whole life.
Yeah.
And it hasn't stopped.
Yeah, I guess that's why I'm here.
Well, I had a conflict today.
Oh, really?
A guy wanted me to meet somebody in McCaskill's. They're trying to set up a panel to get some science, sense out of science in Missouri, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Stem cells.
Ah, Claire McCaskill, yeah.
I wanted to sit on the panel, but I couldn't do it today.
Mm.
I don't know. But I kind of shudder at that, but you can cash in on it. Of course, Norrenner is younger. He cashed in on it, and he's gotten the top job. The Riken Institute would be the top research institute. It'd be the Max Planck of Japan.
Well, it gives you some credibility in the organization, you know.
Now Monsanto's mixed up because they didn't exist when in 2001. They were...
Yeah.
The Monsanto name was gone.
Right.
Pfizer, first it was Pharmacia bought Monsanto, and then Pfizer bought Pharmacia, and so that the Monsanto name was zilch.
Yeah.
And one of these agents wrote us and said, it's too bad we aren't one company, we'd celebrate.
Yeah.
Everything. They didn't put a plaque up finally. The president, Monsanto, did put a plaque up in front of one of their buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But they included, and I'm very happy, they did a Sabine Vineyard, the plaque, which is good because that's the hard part of the thing.
I was curious about, I saw those
that
names.
That is the part because it's a joint effort, and I happen to be the oldest one. And I didn't start it. That's no question about it, but I couldn't have finished it without both Sabine Vineyard and...
This guy, there's this fellow, Weinkauf?
Weinkauf?
Yeah.
Well, that's the executive I worked with a lot back in the 50s on the cortisone thing.
Mm.
I love a Weinkauf. He was a character. His quaint expressions still remain. He says, and, you're evaluating projects. He says, don't ever look up a dead horse's ass.
Okay.
I love him on that kind of spec, but we actually did get Woodward. Remember, didn't get the cortisone. We did get the cortisone in the 50s. So we were actually made a sample, probably 100 milligrams of racemic cortisone and something like that. But we used diazomethane to get there, which would have been out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, I don't think anyone wants to commercialize diazomethane.
So on the New York Academy of Sciences, that was your member of the New York Academy? Or
no, I used that because it was an easy place to publish.
Okay.
That's why I get that. And so I had several things there. And the other place that you could do it readily was Gordon Conferences, which don't require much. The Patent Department doesn't care what you say, it's what you write.
Right, exactly.
And with that, it's difficult to do that. One thing we feel bad about, we could have written an article for JCS that would have been a classic paper. You know, they occasionally have classic papers, and really Cargon got that.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the classic paper because he got the first place he could do it. We couldn't get it out fast enough.
Mm.
A full paper takes too much scrutiny.
Mm. Inside the industrial setting.
Yeah, that is one of the difficulties.
Yeah.
And that's always going to be in industry. The only other advantage of industry is that you can sometimes see the results of your efforts used.
Mm.
And I didn't push phenylalanine hard enough. That was another one that I kind of regret. Phenylalanine, that's the way to make phenylalanine, but you start with benzaldehyde, and that's the key. Benzaldehyde is only used in perfumes.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive.
Hmm.
But it doesn't need to be expensive. It could be made by oxidation of toluene. I mean, the chemistry isn't all there. And the phenylalanine is a much bigger volume thing. But I regret that I didn't push that hard enough. And so that there's a sweetener that's based on that. This ethyl or aspartate. They make that by fermentation of glucose, which is fine, but it took them years to do it, whereas this could be done much faster. And aspartame has been made with phenylalanine. It's made by this technique.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't do it. The Italians did.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what they're doing now, but I do know that was one. And one of the drawbacks in phenylalanine is that the separations aren't as clean. That the crystals, it forms a DL compound, you know, and you don't separate out as readily. Whereas if you get 80% yield of you get 80% out in hand.
Right.
But you only get, if the phenylalanine, if you get 80%, you only get about 60% out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You get the rest, but it's hard to get out.
And because it's still
even
95%
is kind of bad.
Hmm.
But now they have 100% catalysts, so they report. I mean, the guy in DuPont came along 93 or so with Burke, and he came up with a phosphoenegative, same as enzyme. Now he claims 100%. Whether he's precisely 100% or is 99, mm-hmm. but from a preferred point of view, if we're good, and now you wouldn't give the time of day to a catalyst, it was almost 100%.
Yeah.
I think one of the significant features, and it came out when I wrote this with Noriari, it's had a resurgence in this century of activity that perhaps isn't a week go by at Merck that somebody doesn't run an asymmetric hydrogenation in their labs, because they're all pharmaceuticals are chiral now.
Yeah.
And either making the starting materials or the finished goods or something. And usually if you can make them with hydrogen, you're going to make them with hydrogen, because that's the simplest.
Sure.
It isn't like Barry Schaffer's stuff. He can make exotic things, but you won't do it unless you have to.
Right.
But this one you will try to. And the reason this is so easy is because of the lab supply houses. You don't have to make your phosphenes anymore. I can see, show you my files. Sigma Aldrich, structures that we wouldn't even dare draw on. But what they've done is just some professor has a few students in Pennsylvania. This one was someplace, I think it was University of Pennsylvania, but that's a nice PhD problem. You get a good phosphine, and it's hard as hell to make. You don't have to make very much of it for the lab supply houses.
Yeah.
Nobody ever buys, you don't even buy a half a gram. They're so active. You see, these things, back to our old adage, these our activities are fantastic. We used in our plant 20,000 to one, and that's almost throwaway.
Yeah.
I could go back and we aren't running the plant anymore. We're out of that field, but I could go back and do 100,000 to one.
Mm-hmm.
Noriari found a case, I think it was almost 2 million to one. 2 million to one.
That's amazing.
Because it's molecularly dispersed.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the difference on a carrier. You're only getting the palladium that's on the surface.
And
talking molecules, you're only talking about it. Mm-hmm. You're probably talking just as active catalysts, but you're only using about 1% of your palladium, if that much.
Yeah.
Maybe less. Maybe it's a hundredth of a percent of the palladium is being used for doing a really catalytic job.
So it's just not the idea of coming up with a catalyst, but the fact that the homogeneous catalyst.
The homogeneous catalyst is molecularly dispersed, and that makes it potential. And enzymes, nature uses homogeneous catalysts. They're all in solution.
Sure.
And, so that approach is about as fast an enzyme as you can get. Now, that had other drawbacks, that million to one, but there's a commercial process for making a herbicide. That's the biggest scale one I dug up.
Hmm.
The herbicide based on diethyl block-handed diethyl aniline and chloracetamine. We had one, we called it Lasso.
Mm.
Dual is a German variant, and it has a chiral center. And they don't get a very good result, but they got an iridium ferrocene complex, and it gives them about 60 or 70%, and they just sell that mixture.
Mm.
But it's only one isomer is very active.
Mm.
And instead of selling a 50-50 mixture and getting on there, they get up their activity double or so, and so you can cut down the pounds per acre.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they say it's commercial, and I don't know how well they've done it, but that would be the biggest scale commercial thing. I know the Takasago menthol is, and menthol is a pretty big volume item. It's relative to doper,
Did you, most of this stuff I'm looking at here, publications and literature, did you present any of this at scientific conferences, or ACS meetings or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, I did. I went to quite a few conferences and things, and did that.
Were these? I mean, how was this type of stuff received in your sessions? The chemistry that is showing.
Well, there's extreme interest in the 70s on the thing, mm-hmm. and probably the most interest was when actually we didn't have anything out much, and I think it was just before Cargan published, we went to a conference in La Baule, France. The family went to. It was a very nice conference. And this is on asymmetric synthesis. Mm-hmm. And some things were... we weren't on the invited list, neither Cargan nor we were. And a number of people had things come out, and they were getting 20%, 15%. They said, well, if they made the one group a little bigger, had come out 20% instead of 15%, mm-hmm. and were getting a gain. And Mislow was there, and he was very caustic. He got up and showed the energy differences and how trivial it would be to get from 20 to 25%, since it's only 2 kilocalories to get 90% mm-hmm. differences. And so he just said, anybody who's indulging in any speculation as to what making things go is indulging in pure fantasy. He, mm-hmm. said. Mm-hmm. He sat them all down. But then at the end of the conference, Cargan and I asked us to say a few words, and we each said where we were. I think we were at 60% or something like that. Mm. And that was extreme interest in that time.
So you weren't actually giving a paper?
No, we weren't invited to give a paper. No,
but they knew you were working in the field, so they wanted to know what you were doing.
But then they found out that we were in there, and so they had us at the last night. They had us give a 15 talk each mm-hmm. of us, and we gave out what we were in there, mm. which is kind of a thrill because it was putting you on the program.
Yeah.
I mean, we were the only ones that had anything.
Yeah, yeah.
The only ones.
So all the invited speakers.
The others had nobody else. Nobody else had a thing.
The invited speakers were kind of lowballing, they were getting lowball numbers, and here you guys weren't even invited, and you were doing much better than
that. That's right. Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, that was. We got involved in a number of conferences and things. And
was the company pretty liberal about going to conferences?
They weren't too bad. They weren't too bad. No, they were on that. I did that, and so I think I could do that. Where they balk is, and they have to put lots of money. They like exploratory research. That didn't cost very much. You see, when you have to make a process out of it, I mean, it's an awful lot of complication putting that L-DOPA in. You mm-hmm. have to have a special file. Only one guy's full time on that, mm-hmm. just to get all of. I forget, there's some master file you have to get for a pharmaceutical, and you have to, there's so much red tape mm-hmm. getting the thing going, and then we had to adapt it to the saccharin plant, which became available at the right time, actually. We had to do that,
So saccharin was
a lot of little things. We put it, Monsanto got out of saccharin at that time.
Uh-huh.
It was a combination of a lot of things came together, and so we were able to adapt the saccharin plant. Now, the saccharin plant had lead reactors, because that was really using almost cleaning solution on orthosulfuring sulfonamide, but it was not very much different in cleaning solution. Mm. Sulfuric and nitric acids or something like that. Mm. But saccharin's a pretty stable compound, but anyhow, they had banned it. But the basic reactors aren't most of the plant. Most of the plant for our fine chemicals are crystallizers and that stuff,
mm-hmm.
and the fillers and all that, so we could use all that. And
so were you really involved in the plant conversion?
Yeah, and I was involved with the engineers, but my people were, and we added more people at that time, and Vineyard was very much involved in that. And so getting that plant started was, and that was most of the problems, it's interesting, weren't the hydrogenation.
It was everything
that
else.
Never had a glitch. We never had a hydrogenation that ran without a glitch for, they ran, maybe 15 years. And some of those nitro reductions that I was talking about earlier, they often, not often, but frequently they poison for some reason or other, and you got to recatalyze and start over again and do something. But this one never had a batch that wouldn't go. One interesting one, really amazed us. I had this guy, Bill Sherman. We were in our first large-scale batch in a 1,000-gallon reactor, which is a big reactor. Mm-hmm. That's a commercial size. We did the 50. Well, Sherman was doing the night shift for me on that. And we started it off, and we put in an amount of catalyst that we had to use for the pilot plant, which was, as it turned out, was way too much. But we put it in, and he called me, and he said, well, I started it up, and I said, well, it's going to take you 8 hours. You better go out and get some dinner and come back, because nothing's going to be happening much. Mm-hmm. He saw it was going, taking up hydrogen. And he came back in about an hour and a half, and he called me, and he said, it's not taking up hydrogen. Well, that's a real problem. I said, oh, God, what do we do? And I said, well, just take a sample, let's find out from the UV spectra how far we're going. They called me back in half an hour, I said, we're done. So couldn't maintain the pressure, it took it up so fast.
Oh, my.
Well, they just did it from a bank of hydrogen cylinders in a truck or something, you know. We put way too much catalyst in then because we cut it way back. But it was the first clean system we'd had.
Mm, okay.
We hadn't had a clean, and clean meant getting the oxygen out of the thing. And the reason oxygen of the air is a poison. Mm. And on a small scale in the lab, we had oxygen in most of our hydrogen cylinders.
Mm.
We later learned to pick them so they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Run an analysis. But a lot of them, it's a filling error.
Sure.
When you cap it up, you fill it. It's not very much, but then you put so little catalyst in, it's
a little bit of oxygen, and a little bit of catalyst, mix it up.
Oxygen, phosphine oxide, and gone. And peroxide the same way. Well, on the large scale, you don't even use a dry intermediate. You use a wet intermediate. You don't want to dry it. You're going to put it back in water and mm-hmm. alcohol again. So you just filter off the intermediate, put it in an hydrogenated. And so there's no air in the interstices, the crystals. Mm-hmm. Because the dry intermediate has a lot of air, and it takes a long time to get it out. We didn't get it all out in the pilot plant. You have to, by vetting and filling, and
sure.
filling with nitrogen and then hydrogen. And so that was the first time we were clean. It was on a 1,000-gallon scale.
And it went like wham, all over it.
Went wham.
Wow, crazy.
It is crazy, but it's a funny experience.
So the saccharin plant, where was that located?
Queenie. Yeah, most of the fine chemical things were done at Queenie, and also the thallium, a lot of it. That was the basic thing, and the little larger volume things were done over at Kremrick.
Okay.
Phenol and the bigger things, and that was interesting, but that's how it goes. But I think that this resurgence is interesting, how this occurred, and since 2000, and this is a natural problem that a guy can say, find a phosphine that's better than what's out there, mm-hmm. and you can do that. And they've improved on in their areas by that.
Wow.
These are called hindered biphenyls, and they've got hindered biphenyls that are adjustable now. Oh, God. But the lab supply houses, I wish I'd emphasized that more. I didn't think of it. I wrote that in there, but I would have emphasized it.
Mm-hmm.
Have played a terrific role, because it isn't easy to do otherwise you have a chiral compound, you have to make your own phosphine, you're not going to bother.
Yeah. So, this, I mean, my sense is that the chemist, the thing that makes it work is this catalyst.
Catalyst, yes.
And the synthesis of the catalyst is kind of like the rate limiting step in the process.
Oh, yes, that's the limiting step, and you don't do it lightly. But if the lab supply houses have it for purchase, and it, sure, it costs you $100, but that is much. You only need a little bit, because I say 100 gram, most lab preps you use about 2,000 to 1. That mm-hmm. runs an awful lot, but you can go lower than that, so the things are active as all hell. And you can put them with the metal yourself, or maybe even buy them with the metal, but we actually made a complex with the rhodium in that.
So, but now, while we're mentioning the metal, I was going to come back to that. How do you, the metal is an important part of the package.
Yeah, complex with the phosphine.
So this is the complex of the metal with the phosphine that makes it work.
That's
and then
right.
You have to make sure that the substituents on the phosphine are the correct ones.
Correct
for
structure.
Your particular synthetic problem.
Right. And most amino acids, it's general. It doesn't seem to make much difference. So, Roche went through an awful lot of amino acids, known and unknown, 20 to 30, and they all came out about the same. Mm-hmm. So the side group doesn't seem to make much difference. It's, in other words, it's dominating the actual. So the you start with a dehydroamino acid, and it comes on the same. So so you do get a lot of successful results with a given structure, even though you don't necessarily predict that you would. Mm-hmm. Enzymes don't do this. It's an enzyme for everything, practically.
Yeah, each one is.
But these are, you do get quite a little versatility, and BINAT does an awful lot of things with ruthenium.
So now the metal is also part of the picture, though.
Yes.
So
the metal, it won't work without the metal. It's the phosphine complexes with the metal, and that's your catalyst.
Okay. So, but the metal, I mean, you're talking about ruthenium, and then there's
iridium,
and
rhodium. Yeah.
So are they rare earths or no?
What?
Are they the rare earth?
They're noble metals. Noble
metals.
Platinum. Platinum's among them, palladium.
Okay.
And all of these are being used today for various kinds of reactions.
So it's a metal complex. Mm.
Yes.
With the phosphine.
Yeah.
With the substituted phosphine that makes it go.
That's right.
Okay. But the metal is important. Yeah. I mean, the selection of the metal is also critical.
Yes. Well, rhodium is where everybody gets started. Mm-hmm. But ruthenium is harder because it compounds don't make as easily, but it seems to be more versatile. But I'd say still rhodium's being used. Rhodiums are very dear. It's more dear than platinum and palladium. But you use so damn little. Mm-hmm. That's just the thing. But I think the biggest use for the technology is as a labor-saving device in a laboratory rather than commercial. Because it is a labor-saving device.
Oh, yeah.
Chemistry is better, and you can make all these chiral things without thinking twice. You don't worry. I can make that and have it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Why bother? Maybe do me some good, may not.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know, that's when Noriega came into the game. He had faith to make the BINAP. We wrote BINAP on thing that's too damn hard to make compared to the things we made. It is much harder to make than what we made.
Yeah.
And we didn't think it would be that much better. And it isn't with rhodium. Mm. It has to be it's good with rhodium, but it's sluggish. But with ruthenium, it's a different story. Mm. And
do we really know exactly how these things work?
Isn't that interesting? Yes, there's a lot of speculation on the thing, but when you really get down to it, we don't know how any chemical reaction works too well. You know what I mean? We have pictures and models, and they're great, useful, but they all have limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that we do know. I've speculated, and every time I come up with a theory, and that's another story, because Halpern, who's also a consultant with us, took up a mechanistic study, and he did quite a lot of studies in the mechanism, and added quite a lot to it. Jack Halpern, he's at University of Chicago, still there. He's perennial in that respect. But he immediately took up work on the mechanism, and he did elucidate it quite a bit, where the chiral thing was taking place and so forth. But the exact structure of the transition state, in my opinion, remains elusive. But I'm wondering how many transition states in chemistry do we know the exact? Because when we get down to making formal pictures, that isn't what molecules look like.
Right. They don't. You'd like to think of them in those terms, but
we
that's...
We think of them in terms of the models we draw, but not that way. And the thing is that we're talking such tiny energy differences even to get 90% yield. I always pointed out lectures get 90% yield, which you consider good, is only 2 kilocalories difference between the two possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And hell, that's the rotation barrier in ethane.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I point that out. Rotation barrier in ethane. So it's terribly subtle.
And, yes.
We had the ortho-anisyl group. We never made a good thing without it. And no one else has ever found it did any good. I don't think a single venture since then has ever exploited the author in a shoe.
So when you finally got around to making El Dopo, was that a, did Monsanto essentially had the corner on that market for a while?
Yes, they had the corner on that market for 10, 15 years.
Okay.
And this is another thing that amuses you about corporations. One time the engineer, I think his name was Dougie Domingo's name, he was going to meet with me, I think it was on something else, about 1978 or 90, and he said, well, I'm going to be late for your meeting this morning. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I hope you'd be there. And he said, well, actually, we're having a celebration in the El Dopo department for our millionth pound. Just so we can get invited. Isn't that funny, though? I mean, it's just the way corporations are. That they wouldn't have thought of asking the inventors to come down and have a coffee in the government or whatever they did.
Yeah, they probably didn't even know who was responsible for that.
They never realized they were doing a first for a synthesis. Now, maybe that's because I didn't publicize it hard enough, but they didn't realize that was a first, a world's first.
But that also, the fact that it was applied to a compound that was important to helping to cure a disease state or treat a disease state made it worthy of the prize.
That's right. Well, now, I think that what attracted the Swiss Academy, because this chiral thing is basic to the origin of life, and life sciences is very basic in that. And I think if this had been an improvement for a way to make nylon, they wouldn't have probably been very interested. They did do the Ziegler-Natta, but they were in universities.
Yeah.
See what I mean? That's controlled polymerization. But if Monsanto had, and they had there a new way of making nylon with electrochemistry, and that would never have been recognized, that though commercially for them it was much more important. But this had the connection with life sciences, I think. And in fact, and there's no question that the Swedish Academy was attracted by the rapid commercialization. See, the commercialization was only 50 gallons would be commercial for them. That's only 6 months from the time that we got CAMP. And I didn't even think of CAMP as a discovery until I wrote the Nobel lecture. And then I said, well, that's the discovery. And the DIPAMP, which we call the next one, which gave better yields.
Mm-hmm.
That was easy. Just pulled CAMP out and put that in. And then it turned out to be easier to make. I thought was the real basic discovery, but it really wasn't when you look at it. It was the first breakthrough was CAMP. And everybody nicknames it. Phosphine, and they all got nicknames, and there's a whole bunch of them out there now.
So I'm curious.
But even academia quit after the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
They had us about five or six people, and we went to meetings, and they all had phosphines that worked well
for them, and
but nothing any further than what we had, just the same. And Cargon tried to exploit. He didn't make many other catalysts, so he just exploited his diopa and all kinds of structures and everything. And he was fairly versatile, but not anything like what Noriari came up with. And
so the Nobel Committee, they always very succinctly make a statement about what you're getting the prize for. So they said it was for their work on chirally catalyzed hydrogenation reactions.
Yes.
Is that an accurate?
That's right. You see, that's what it was. Just applying it once to L-DOPA doesn't mean we didn't invent a process. We invented a chiral hydrogenation which could be applied to this. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And somebody wanted to set the history record straight. And presumably that was Corey, but I don't know.
You have no idea.
I'm not sure, because of this anomaly with Per Alberg. When I was over there, he said, he kidded me. He said, you're not waiting for that reprint. And that was all right. But yeah, but he said it was decided way before, so I'm just not aware. And he says, 50 years, you can open up. They'll open up the files and let you know what went on. And I think it's very good they keep it quiet, because... But there is, but I noticed that nearly every prize is somebody's left out. And most of them, chemical ones, are joint. There's a few that aren't. But usually the ones that aren't joint are somebody that's been a had a long course, like Corey got it, of productivity in an area. Mm-hmm. And so he's an expert, but he probably hadn't invented a lot, you know what I mean? And so for the Flash invention, of course, I don't know.
So is there a downside to this price thing?
I don't know. I guess the worst part is if the guy that gets left out is hard, yeah, I think it certainly gets more acclaim, maybe more than it's worth, but it's because of its history. Mm-hmm. And I've read fairly extensively on the history of the prize and so forth. And again, that was the first time anything like that had been done. They'd had a few from the French Chemical Society, which were barely more than a pat on the back or something. But this was the first time that anybody had contemplated this kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It really took a lot of doing to get it set up, and it couldn't be done by a big country. It's better done by a small country.
And so all the proceeds from that come from this money that Nobel invested?
They're very cautious where that, I don't know where that's invested, they don't tell you.
Yeah.
But they never spend more than their income. And so the price is, amount is varied a lot. They first had it in such conservative investment that it wasn't very much. Still, but it wasn't enough, so they decided to go into stocks and things, and I'm sure they've got a, I don't think they divulge their portfolio to anybody there.
I'm pretty sure they don't.
No, they've, but they're very, very international, I'm sure.
I'm not sure I'd want to be the guy who manages that portfolio either.
Yeah. Well, and they throw such a gala ceremony, too. That none of them, nobody equals the ceremony. It's really quite gallant. They use the king and queen, and they do the whole thing upright.
So how long were you in?
A week over there.
It was a week?
Yeah. And they really, it's, your time is full. You get treated like a VIP. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you, a car and a driver and an adjutant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he takes you. You just sit at 9:30, I'll meet you tomorrow morning, and here's the schedule, and you just go, you don't have to think. So I didn't. We went out once to a restaurant in Stockholm. Just one night, I didn't think ever. But they had a lot of interesting luncheons. And of course, they're all, it's a high tax area, so they love expensive luncheons.
Oh, yeah.
That just fosters them, and all those university professors and everything. And so they had a lot of luncheons around, and they were fun. I liked it. I like a luncheon better than the big formal affairs.
Yeah.
And a lot of people didn't attend a lot of them. I attended the luncheons and enjoyed them immensely. And
so I'm just looking here. I just, for the fun of it, because I'm sensitive to the industrial chemist kind of situation. I looked at the organizations that you work for. In 1968, it was Organic Chemicals Division.
Yeah.
In 1972, it was Monsanto Industrial Chemicals. Same in 75. Then in 77, it was just Monsanto Company. In 81, it was Corporate Research Laboratories. And then in 83, it was Monsanto Agricultural Research Division.
Yeah.
So,
a lot of that's the same thing.
Sure.
The Organic Division, Monsanto divides itself in various ways. The original way, they had an organic division, an inorganic division, and a plastics division.
Okay.
And that was probably as good a way as they get, but they didn't. Every once in a while, they have a period of troubles. They change the organizations. And then the ag divisions came off of the organic division. And then that became big with their herbicides.
Right.
And in fact, is that when I spent my final years in the ag division doing whatever I really wanted to do. I didn't get very far on it, but I had a few things going. But
so then Monsanto eventually disappeared into this buyout thing.
Into Pharmacia. And they didn't want the ag division, to Pfizer. And Pfizer didn't want the ag division, so that's what split off Monsanto.
So they split it off, and they just called themselves Monsanto.
But the culture is pretty much the same. Corporations all have their own culture, and the culture is very much the same. The big feature of the culture that It's no nepotism. And that they've adhered to that. They don't have any rules. There's nothing written on paper. But there is no nepotism. You never have the bosses or the department head's son working for you.
Hmm.
You never do.
Hmm.
And they adhere to that, even though it isn't. It's one of those unwritten rules. It's part of the culture.
Hmm.
Even though the boss's son, Queenie, was it. He was the only one that ever was that.
Mm-hmm.
And but it didn't. It's stuck. And so they just, if they want to go into chemistry, they go to something else. Now, they never, on the union level, they didn't care.
Mm.
But
mm.
on the technical level, they have adhered to that. And I've had friends at Mallinckrodt, and it's terrible if you have one of the Mallinckrodt kids in your lab. He comes in at 10 o'clock and runs a few experiments and leaves for a golf date or something, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible,
mm-hmm.
but that's exactly what the kids did.
Mm-hmm.
I play bridge with the Mallinckrodt group, and it doesn't make for anything, but that's one thing that I can see from the few months on the meetings I go to occasionally, that the culture is pretty much the same, even though they're in a different field. They do sell one chemical, Roundup, and a few herbicides, but mostly it's modified seeds.
Yeah, they're getting into this kind of
genetically modified seeds is what's their business.
Yeah.
And they're beginning to make some go of it.
So, I know that's getting to be a pretty big area. I heard a DuPont person in their research overview thing give a talk about how they're heading into this area of genetic modification of things to try and improve the crop yields and all that kind of good stuff. So that's what the ag division, or well, what Monsanto, which used to be the old agricultural division, that's what they're up to now. So the name was on in kind of the same evolution, so to speak. So I guess we kind of wrap things up. I was wondering
okay.
if you had any parting words of wisdom.
Well, I
philosophical
parting
thoughts.
Words of wisdom that I always make it that industry doesn't do enough what I call undirected research or exploratory research, and everything is too budgeted, and you don't really get anything. Any breakthroughs. And as I say, Roundup came out of non-budgeted research.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Same thing, and so did most of the significant discoveries, the electrochemical discovery to make hexamethylene diamine down in the Pensacola came out of. Well, it was a little budgeted, but a little more open-ended. You know, I mean, you put a guy on it, but you don't tell him what the hell you'll do.
You
and sometimes he was goal-oriented in that case. But I even think don't have it goal-oriented. Let the research set the goals. But I don't think we do enough of it. You can't do it all that way, and everybody admits that. But even all these big government programs, they're not going to get any breakthroughs on them at all because they don't... You don't have enough of what I call totally undirected research.
Mm-hmm.
And all you can do there is to take a man and bet on him.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you're going to bet wrong. And we've had him in Monsanto that's got a much more complex. It doesn't cost much to do this kind of research. The first part of it doesn't cost much. To commercialize costs more money, but the initial part doesn't cost much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you do like on these huge big things like the Department of Energy does, but I suspect that these huge plants for clean burning of coal will amount to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that, but I suspect that because
you don't do
I think some of the
way.
the basic inventions haven't been made. And one that I still worry about is the battery car. The really good battery hasn't been made yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's going to be made by these people, evolutionary studying battery. They've improved batteries a lot.
Oh, yeah.
God, you're a lead-acid battery now. You don't have to go for years, and you don't have to buy a new one for them. But they don't carry much more energy than they ever did
mm-hmm.
per unit weight.
Mm-hmm.
And the lithium ones are better, but this is a very obvious thing in need of an invention, but I don't think it's going to come from the battery people. I don't know who it's going to come from. And even in your pharmaceutical cures, it may not come from by directly looking cure for cancer or cure mm-hmm. for this disease. It may come from some totally indirect thing. I mean, Monsanto hoped that L-Dopa would come up with some real uses.
Mm-hmm.
I think only one I can think of, it did cure some kind of very rare breast cancer. It was very good for.
Hmm.
I read that once. But it was half a dozen cases a year in the country or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get a pharmaceutical of that going, then everybody studies it for everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a pretty good, it's a worthwhile venture. It's a pretty good chance somebody will find some other area where it is very effective, and this is happening all the time. And I think that was one of the motivations to keep them in for a few years. If this happened and the thing busted open, then they'd also move Vanillin, which is meant that their production costs of Vanillin would be cheaper because they could operate at capacity rather than 70% or 80% of capacity.
Yeah.
And that kept them going, so they liked that. But now they sold all those things to an entirely different company.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what is...
That's the main message I can give is that we have to find ways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a sense, I credit Costco with finding a way to do that in an industrial lab by using it as a training function with a senior man.
Mm-hmm.
Because in... being a year with a senior man, he learns the ropes around a little bit and do something. And so that the people go on to something else, they're a little bit more fit to, you know, how to at least get things done, you know, the stock room is.
Yeah, so you're kind of...
That's the main thing, but I haven't got the complete solution, and I don't think anyone has, but it's the old story and all this... government-supported research is pretty well directed.
Yeah.
Do you think this would have been supported? I suspect it would not have been.
Because I have no idea what they what
see,
they
there
would. If you would go to
people had done asymmetric, not much catalysis, but mostly asymmetric synthesis, where you have a chiral agent and you do it. And in some cases, you got some fairly good results. But you usually use the chiral reagent rather than a catalytic.
Yeah.
And they've been doing this for 100 years since Pasteur opened up the field. But they weren't getting anywhere, and the catalytic was getting nowhere. The only thing, that Akabori work, it was purely empirical. Still, they improved their results, but not, they never did get up to too much putting some kind of a chiral agent on a heterogeneous catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried everything and put a lot of manpower into it. They didn't know. I mean, I don't know. What I don't know is what motivated Wilkinson to even take his coordination compound and see if it was a catalyst. I don't know what made that. I never did find that out. I sat with him at dinner, but I didn't really ask that question right. I don't really know what motivated him to do it, because I don't think he... was looking for a catalyst, so he was looking for unique coordination compounds. That was it was a catalyst. Ferrocene was his baby, and he collaborated with Woodward on the structure of ferrocene, but ferrocene was his baby, and I think that was a thing. And he was making oddball coordination compounds of all kinds, and he may have thought of this as a catalyst, but I don't know found out it was. Maybe he tried that. But there weren't any good homogeneous catalysts before that. There were homogeneous catalysts, but not any of any use.
So I was just thinking about, since we talked about Monsanto a bit, I think, isn't Solutia the old...
Solutia is the old part of Monsanto, yes.
Okay. And they've had their difficulties.
They've had their difficulties, that's right. And it's not their own making either, much of it. Much of it is on pollution by their forebears.
Right.
And they say we got out of the chlorinated biphenyls, which are the culprit. certainly haven't made any since 1970. We were using quite a lot. They were used as plasticizers at one time and so forth, and they're just too durable in the environments.
Yes.
And I don't think many people have died because of them, or anybody, but they polluted a bit where they made them, Aniston, and they're being clobbered for this. And I mean, it's like the sins of the fathers are being fresh. It's all biblical, but really it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't really, nobody thing that's liable would do anything, and they haven't done anything since 1970 that would be bad, but they probably did something before, probably, but they were always been playing by the rules.
Sure.
The rules weren't there.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
The rules, yeah.
And who is to bear those expenses? I don't know. They like to find somebody to bear them, and
they want to saddle somebody with it.
Taking the thing, this is the only way Slusher has to protect themselves.
Yeah.
Paying it off, and this has probably hurt some people's real estate things and so forth. I don't know, but I don't really think it's quite just to forever hold the guy responsible. There should be some statutes of limitations there are and everything else, murder, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
And there should be a statute of limitations on pollution, because, and Love Canal is pretty much the same way, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
There's places we've got up, and maybe we have to collectively put together something to clean it up if that's what's required. But
yeah, it does seem to be unfair.
We had the Times Beach one. That one's the one most ridiculous, because there was a nice low-cost housing for a number of people, but then this put the stuff on the road, and if they hadn't paved it over, it would have probably dispersed the environment.
Yeah.
The wind and the rain, and our analytical people say would have knocked there, would have destroyed it all. But they paved it over, and I don't know.
There was the dioxin thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, dioxin. And dioxin hasn't killed anybody. I went to a lecture on Eschenbroda gave on that a little bit. And he said dioxin hasn't killed anybody. Well, one person was killed, was shot at one, at a demonstration in Italy. But remember they had that blow off at Sevastopol, Italy.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, there are bad things. I mean, we had that terrible thing that we had in the Bhopal in India. To say the chemistry industry isn't completely scot-free or anything, but I feel dioxin isn't one of the very serious. it's associated mine. This is a side project. We were making herbicide esters in our lab. 2,4,5-T, you know, that's we were making esters to see if they could improve the formulations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a free acid, you can make all kinds of esters, and we were doing that. So we had a lab, Quentin Thompson, we had a lab full of those damn things. And there's dioxin. We didn't know about dioxin. That was in the mid-50s.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know dioxin existed then. It hadn't been discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we had parts per million in all those samples we played with, mostly Quentin. He's thriving. I mean, so I don't know, it's more than meets the eye. And that benzene is another one. God, I'm scared the hell of benzene. We're saturated. God, we use benzene.
Yeah.
We extracted vanillin out of the reaction mixture with benzene.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good solvent. We had to hydrocarbons weren't good enough. You needed to pull a more powerful solvent.
Mm-hmm.
And we extracted it with benzene, and that was done. We had lots of benzene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they didn't pay much attention. I don't know how much problems they've had. I've never heard of any unusual. I shouldn't be around anyhow. That's called.
Well, yeah. A lot of the chemists have, you know, when you think about it, they're pretty long-lived. A lot of chemists are long-lived, and they work with this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, what they call bad chemicals.
I don't think there's any evidence that chemists are shorter lived than any other people.
No, I think some of them are, I think, longer lived.
Well, there's a few, but I don't think any statistical evidence that puts them in the short lived, though. I have Dennis Forrester, a personal friend, that died of lung cancer, and he didn't smoke, and he worked with methyl iodide, a mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
They had an acetic acid process that used rhodium iodide as a catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked out the mechanism. And so he was using large quantities. The acetic acid process used terribly small quantities. And presumably that was the cause of his lung cancer, because methyl iodide is a methylating agents are carcinogens.
Mm.
But he never pursued the issue much, but he did die of it, and at an untimely age. And so that's our cases, but I don't really know for sure that was it, but it's hard when it's 15 or 20 years
later.
It happens.
I was actually getting an article out of, I think it was Nature,
mm-hmm.
To send to my son, and it just so happened that they had a lead on this with this World Innovation Foundation, which is all right up here, and I said, I noticed your name.
What?
There, William Knowles. And I was wondering if you
were
aware of the fact that you're involved with this organization or not, you know.
Sirius Foundation. Maybe I signed something with the other 300 Nobel laureates. WIF. Yeah, I signed something.
World Innovation Foundation.
I haven't done much with WIF.
Well, apparently you're on the board of directors or whatever it is.
I'm not too familiar with WIF, but I remember signing some things, trying to get cleaner chemistry and so forth, and global warming, and things that did in my heart, but I didn't really, I'm very active.
Yeah.
But they're using my name, maybe, I don't know if it's in vain or not.
Yeah, well, who knows? I don't know. It's a. It's just the kind of thing that Nobel laureates are subject to.
I know. Yeah, you get quite a lot of unusual things. I got one from the Chinese press, from Beijing or Shanghai,
mm-hmm.
saying China has no homegrown Nobel laureates. What would I do about this?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That's a difficult question to answer.
It sounds like that business that Hegarty done, the road to Stockholm.
Yeah.
Mentioned the fact that there's a dearth of, you know, they're mostly European American,
yes.
And there's not much from the Asian countries. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like they're kind of trying to pick up on that.
I know. Well, there's plenty of non-homegrown Chinese. It's quite a few.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's not many. There's no homegrown, and there's been very few Japanese homegrown. Noriari would be, I think it was just a group in the late 90s on conducting polymers.
Okay.
And I think that was a Japanese group, and that's, there was a lot of pressure behind with Noriari, I think.
Uh-huh.
I think. Nothing to do with it, don't know a thing about it, but I mean, that's,
well, yeah.
I suspect that there was national pressure because the French were. A little, now Carl Gunsberry would draw that, he didn't mind, but the French were very mad. They wrote some scathing articles to the Swedish Academy about this. And,
well, I'm thinking.
Partly justified.
Yeah, I think he's mostly a similar thing with this Toichi Kanaka fellow on the Maldi that I told you about. It's most people in the field think that it should have gone to. Hillenkamp and Karas in Germany, you know, the people are actually doing it. But Tanaka got it, so it is.
I know. The history, I have this book, The Politics of Excellence.
Mm.
I read that. Somebody said
I haven't read that
books.
One.
Well, it's not a very easily readable book, but it goes into just the physics, and it doesn't bother with the. It goes into not the medicine, just the physics and the chemistry.
Mm, okay.
And it's had a whole chapter on Einstein, because that was very controversial. And you remember the Swedish chemist Arrhenius,
mm-hmm.
and he's actually the father of global warming. He's the first one that made calculations in that direction.
Mm.
He's a great chemist, and he got the Nobel Prize. But he was head of the committee for a year, 20 years maybe, and he blackballed Mendeleev because he didn't. There were no gases went on it, you know. And Ramsey, I think, came along with the noble gases, and therefore made it complete. But it was because Mendeleev made some scathing remarks about one of his papers. I don't know. But that came out of the 50-year thing in this book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Madame Curie thing was fascinating, too, of course.
Yeah. What's the name of this book? Politics of Excellence.
Maybe I'll get a copy if you want it.
I'd love to read it.
I've got a copy right here. You don't need to return it very quickly, because I don't think I'll read it again for a long time. For the first 50 years of the prize.
Uh-huh.
And so this is taken from the files.
That's got to be exciting.
And it spends a lot of time on the politics of it, but there's really quite a lot of things in it. But it's an interesting to read about because it has become famous, and it has quite a history.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. But there was a political consideration every time. Not just once.
Oh, wow.
Every time there have been some political considerations. And I guess each year they release another file. Somebody will do another one the second 50 years, but it'll be a while.
Yeah.
And Fritz Haber, of course, was very controversial.
Yeah.
Because he came up with poison gases.
Sure.
But he did a ammonia synthesis.
Right.
That's so he got it. And there were a number, but Madame Curie, because she was up and down, and she was one that certainly wasn't recognized in France, and so she finally got the prize, and they said, what do we got this person right in our own ranks?
Yeah.
But they never admitted it to the French Chemical Society.
Yeah. Well, there's a woman who does a story smith on Madame Curie, and yes. the St. Louis section had her do this performance in Southern Illinois Edwardsville about a year or so ago, and it's just fascinating because she basically acts out the first like two phases of her life.
Yeah.
And she's got, you know, she does the accent and she's got all the props and everything, and and she really dramatizes this woman's difficulties.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you think of a Nobel Prize winning chemist in France and all this kind of stuff as being, you know, born with a silver spoon in her mouth and all this kind of stuff. And in fact, she had a difficult, very difficult time in just getting educated, you know. And so it brought that out, that life is not, you know, so simple for these people, really.
No. Well, I've really had a cushy problem. Education, perhaps my biggest problems were the diversions to other things. in other words, there was no culture of science in my family whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a strong culture of business, very strong culture of business, so as I suspected I'd go in and be a typical business executive.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, most of the PhD chemists, a lot of them do become that.
Sure.
I don't think there's particularly well cut out for it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just look at the salary, you get more of that.
Oh, sure. You definitely get more money.
I don't know why. It's
well, yeah, we don't want to get off on that subject.
No,
that's why these guys get paid so much money. But
yeah.
So what about, I mean, you have your siblings, what do they think of your accomplishment? Is that
well, I think it was a considerable era of surprise. Prize on the whole thing.
What do you do? Call up your brother and say, guess what? I won a Nobel Prize in chemistry.
Yeah. Well, it was people coming to the house all day that day.
I bet.
Yeah. And the press comes there. And They really. It's fairly exhilarating to start with.
Oh, sure.
And getting all that stuff. It's a month and a half is not your own.
Yeah.
But see, there's no other prize that would claim that much of you. The others, it's just usually a dinner and
speeches. Well, let me get a couple of pictures. I think, unless you have any other thoughts you want to record, then we'll go ahead and put this to bed.
How many of these have you done?
Probably